and welcome to Echoes from the Shore, Lessons from Diverse Marine Values, a new podcast from the Diverse Marine Values Project, funded by the Sustainable Management of Marine Resources Programme. For 3 years, the Diverse Marine Values team has been exploring the many ways people value the sea and how these values can be integrated more fully in marine management in the UK. This podcast will give you hints and tips about how to use a diverse suite of methods to understand the relationship between people in the ocean, coast and sea. You'll be hearing about some of the insights, challenges and findings that the team has uncovered, with lessons for you to use these methods in your own research and practice. We hope this podcast series can help to develop capacity across the UK's marine research community and foster new pathways for inclusion of diverse values within marine policy. I'm Dr. Emma McKinley, a senior research fellow at Cardiff University.
And I'm Dr. Victoria Leslie, a research fellow at the University of Portsmouth. And in each episode, we'll be initiating a conversation with researchers from the Diverse Marine Values team to understand more about working on this unique project. For this episode, we are joined by Dr. Emma McKinley. Hi, Emma. Welcome to the Echoes from the Shore podcast.
Thanks, Victoria. It's quite strange being on this side of the process.
Indeed. Would you mind introducing yourself and telling us a bit about your role on the project?
Of course. So as you said, I'm Emma McKinley. I'm a senior research fellow at Cardiff University. I've been based at Cardiff for 8 years. I'm a marine social scientist, so all of my research is around understanding relationships between people, ocean and coastal spaces, and really thinking about how those relationships and what's important to people about those environments, how that's integrated into the decisions that we make about the ocean, the coast, the sea. So for me, the Diverse Marine Values Project really aligned with my own research interests and the work I was doing anyway, particularly thinking about concepts of ocean literacy and public perceptions of marine and coastal systems and that kind of research. So I have been, I've had two roles really within the project officially. One has been to be the test site lead for the Chepstow and Wye catchment test site, which is our cross-border site between England and Wales. And then the second has been to be the work package lead for ocean literacy, which has been one of the kind of underpinning theoretical concepts that we've used throughout the project.
That's really interesting, Emma, that you brought up ocean literacy, because that's my next question. Was going to ask you if you could define what ocean literacy is.
Yeah, of course. So as I said, ocean literacy has been really one of those underpinning concepts that we've used throughout the project. It was really fundamental to our thinking when we were designing the project initially. And really, at its very, very simplest, ocean literacy can be defined as having an understanding of the ocean's influence on you and your influence on the ocean. Ocean literacy was devised by marine educators in the United States in the early 2000s, who really recognised a lack of ocean education within the national curriculum in the US, and they sought to fill that gap. So they developed a program of work around this concept of ocean literacy that had 7 key principles, and they include things like the ocean has an influence on weather and climate, the ocean influences life on Earth, the ocean and humans are inextricably connected. And underneath those 7 principles are a number of kind of underpinning fundamental concepts. And the idea was that by educating students, so this was very much a school-based concept, so by educating students through generally formal education around those 7 principles, those 40-odd concepts, that you would end up with an ocean-literate person. So somebody who knew about ocean issues, who was able to communicate about those ocean issues to their peers, their friends, their family, and who could then use that information to make sensible, responsible decisions and behaviours, and take sensible behaviours towards the ocean. And that concept has really changed over the last 20 years or so. So the way we've been using it in the project has been a little bit different.
I was going to ask about the term literacy, because from my understanding, ocean literacy, there were other potential ways of framing or using language to describe the concepts and the some of the thinking behind the concept. I don't know if you could go into any detail about that at all.
Yeah, of course. Ocean literacy, it's definitely a tricky concept, and that idea of literacy particularly has definitely posed some challenges in recent years. As I said, the concept really did come from this marine education background in North America. And so that focus on literacy kind of makes sense when you think about the origins of the concept. Like, it kind of, it's understandable. But as we've moved throughout the kind of evolution of the concept, and now we really talk about it having up to 10 dimensions and maybe more, and those dimensions include the original things of knowledge and communication and behaviour, but also things like emotions and attitudes, the kind of activism that people can engage with, how people access and experience marine and coastal environments, and how all of those things factor into their ocean literacy or their behaviours. So the concept has really evolved, and so it's no longer about that literacy or that knowledge, and I'm saying literacy in inverted commas for those that can't see me. So yes, it's definitely evolved as a concept. We are working within that term of ocean literacy, and part of that is because within the UN Ocean Decade, which launched in January 2021, ocean literacy has really been positioned as a mechanism for change for Challenge 10 within the Ocean Decade. And Challenge 10 has recently been rephrased as restoring the relationship between society and the ocean. It was originally written as transforming the relationship between humanity and the ocean. But there's been a lot of discussion in the last couple of years about, you know, really needing to recognise that there are many communities across the world where they don't need their relationship to be transformed. They live in harmony with the ocean. They live in a really sustainable way that includes traditional and local and indigenous communities in different places. And that actually many of us could do well to learn from those communities. And so this rephrasing of Challenge 10 has tried to recognise that existing knowledge and those existing ways of knowing the ocean. And at the same time, this kind of evolved concept of ocean literacy has sought to really become more inclusive and be more inclusive of all of those different ways of knowing, those different values that people can hold with between marine and coastal environments and themselves.
So this kind of idea that the multiple dimensions of ocean literacy and the fact that they encompass behaviour and emotions, I think it's a kind of a hard concept to kind of get your head around, but also is so kind of pivotal to what we were doing on the Diverse Marine Values Project, which was just trying to think about different ways that we could assess the many ways that we value the sea and the coast. And I suppose using ocean literacy provided another dimension for us, or a framing for us to think about how to view that. So I was wondering if you could go into more detail thinking about what was the role of ocean literacy in the project.
Yeah, that's a really great kind of introduction to how we used it, and you're very right that the concept provided that framework, or one of the two kind of dominant frameworks that we were using within the project. And for us within the ocean literacy work, we were using it as a way of thinking about those diverse expressions, I suppose, of people's relationships with marine and coastal environments in the three communities that we were working in. And what we designed was an ocean literacy assessment tool, so a questionnaire that was based on the National Ocean Literacy Survey that was carried out across the UK in 2021 and 2022. So this was designed to be much more place-based and really drawing on the themes that we were exploring in each of our three communities, but also asking questions that allowed us to explore multiple dimensions of ocean literacy. The tools we use maybe don't capture all 10 dimensions that there are within the concept at the moment, but it was more than trying to understand knowledge. It was also trying to understand how people feel when they think about the ocean. What is their emotional response? What kind of activities do they engage with when they're beside the sea, when they're at the coast, to try and give us some of that insight into that access and experience dimension. Where do they get information from, and how much do they trust the information they're getting, to try and get insight into trust and transparency, as well as some of that knowledge aspect. So we used questions that included term familiarity that was relevant to the communities that we were working in. So, for example, in Shetland, one of the things we were really trying to use the Ocean Literacy Survey for was to understand how aware people were of the marine planning process in Shetland, and that hopefully it will use as a baseline assessment for them to track impact of the marine planning process going forward. So we included questions and statements that were related to that to allow us to be able to track that change using those same questions. Questionnaires are, of course, not an in-depth assessment tool. And there's definitely a lot of work that could be done through the more qualitative and arts-based methods that we've been using in the project. And so although ocean literacy has had its kind of its own work package in the project, it's actually also been that kind of underpinning theme throughout some of the arts-based methodologies as well. And we've really thought about how some of the community voice method work that Sue's talked about already, that how that could be explored through an ocean literacy lens. We also thought about it from a theatre perspective too, that Cressida and Erica will talk about. So it's really provided that framework that includes multiple ways of knowing and multiple relationships, and it is inclusive of that multiplicity to allow us to explore those relationships.
You've kind of started to talk about the next question I was going to ask, which is about how you personally have engaged in a project. You've used quite a lot of different methodologies. You've worked across different work packages. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, and also to reflect on how that experience has impacted your own research that you've been leading.
It's definitely one of the bits that most excited me about this project. I was really excited about working with such a mixed team, but particularly working with people who are involved in creative disciplines and creative industries, really. So learning new methods, that was something I was really excited about and really attracted to within this project. And so I have definitely made the most of that opportunity while working in Diverse Marine Values project team. And the fact that ocean literacy is that underpinning kind of undercurrent throughout the project has definitely allowed me to be involved in multiple bits of the project. So I've been really lucky, and I've been able to be part of the community voice method team. I've carried out the interviews. I've been part of the workshops in all three case study sites, actually in all three test sites, which has been amazing. I've been part of the theatre work in Shetland as well, which has been wonderful to work with Erica and to learn about how theatre can be such a process-led part of research. And it's not necessarily about the production, but it's actually the process and the conversations and the co-creation that happens alongside that you really get those insights. And one of the things that I've really enjoyed was the digital storytelling that we did with Elena. And that's definitely a method that I will take forward myself, I think. And I think as someone, although I do a lot of questionnaire-based work, qualitative research is definitely where my heart is. And so using creative methods and arts-based methods and working with all of you incredible artists and scholars has been a really fantastic part of being within the project. And I think has definitely influenced the methods I will use going forward. You know, I'm really excited to use what I've learned in the project and to think about you know, what works well and with what communities, and how we can really make sure we are reaching different voices. I think that's been one of the really interesting lessons about this project, actually, is that, you know, the goal was never, or at least in my mind, the goal was never to use every method with every person. It was to show that different methods and different ways of engaging with people will work differently for different audiences. And I think we've really, really shown that. And for me, this project has really highlighted the importance of, you know, stretching our minds when we're working within research projects and working with the whole set of methodologies and tools that are available to us to ensure that we are engaging with as many people as we can and making sure that as many voices are heard as possible, so that we're not kind of losing really important and valuable insights and relationships that could be captured. So that's definitely one of the lessons I've learned. I'm not saying it's particularly easy. And also, I think the other thing is that my brain is trained in a particular way. And so one of the reflections I have of working in a transdisciplinary project is that, you know, you have to give yourself space to kind of realize that your brain might think in this way, but actually this discipline needs it to work in a different way. And that's been quite an interesting process too, to kind of just be comfortable with the learning and the change in approach. And that's been really fantastic.
I suppose it's also been a two-way process as well. So obviously you've been working as an active researcher, using all these different methods and having exposure and detailed understanding of applying these methods from the arts-based arena. But you've also, as you kind of mentioned, the ocean literacy kind of concepts have been really embedded in some of those methods too. So there has been this wonderful exchange working as well. So in the CVM, for instance, you know, the questionnaire was influenced by the ocean literacy frameworks, as well as the analysis, and also the theatre as well. So do you feel that kind of transdisciplinarity really kind of goes to the heart of what we're trying to do on the Diverse Marine Values Project, that it is more about exchange as well as kind of exposure to different methods?
Yes, absolutely. I think that exchange of ways of thinking, ways of understanding has been really, really important. And I don't think I'd be the only one in the project team who said that they've learned as a result of that whole process. And also just thinking very much from an ocean literacy perspective and the research that currently exists. I mean, although ocean literacy has been around as a concept for 20 years, so 2024 is a 20-year anniversary, really, of ocean literacy being devised as a concept. Ocean literacy research is actually relatively young. Most work has been very practice-based, very much around developing education based initiatives, which have been fantastic, but we've kind of lacked the research to kind of understand the impact of those initiatives, to evaluate them, to think about how ocean literacy can be a policy mechanism for change. And also there's been a real dependence on questionnaire-based work. And so the methods that we've been using through the Diverse Marine Values Project has really got into some of the nitty-gritty of ocean literacy, the emotional side of ocean literacy. And that's what's really important. If you think about what encourages us to change behaviour, it's largely emotions. It's largely what we care about, what we connect with. And so I think what we're really seeing in ocean literacy research is a recognition of that very human part of connecting people and the ocean. And so being part of this project team has really allowed me to further explore that and hopefully expand that part of ocean literacy research. So we've submitted a paper on ocean literacy and theatre, which, you know, is incredible to see. So this exchange has been really, really important, and I think is really pushing the theoretical discussions around ocean literacy as well as developing those new methods, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I think that you've really kind of spoken to the fact that the way that we've been engaging with each other in the project has not only some of the methods we've been using have allowed us to kind of pivot or be adaptive depending on the different audiences we were trying to reach, but also within our own methodologies that we've been kind of learning with each other and informing each other's processes through this kind of collaborative this collaborative working together. I was going to go back to thinking about the nitty gritty of ocean literacy and how it's been used in our project, and ask you, how did you assess the ocean literacy across the three test sites?
Yeah, so one of the methods that I've mentioned already is that questionnaire based work that we did in all three communities, and as I said, that was really based on the national survey that's already been done. We did tailor the questions to ensure that they were relevant for each of the three communities, and that was a really great way of allowing us to get that baseline data. In each of the three places, the hope is that questionnaire, as I said, provides that baseline and will be used going forward to assess changes in kind of community awareness or community understanding, as I said, in Shetland for the marine planning process. In Portsmouth and in Chepstow and the Wye catchment, it's linking to the motion for the ocean or the motion for the rivers and ocean work that's being done in those communities. So that's been one way that I've really driven that work. One of the other things that we've done in the ocean literacy work package is really thinking about not just ocean literacy within the communities, but also within the decision-making institutions. So a lot of focus of ocean literacy research has been very public-facing. But actually, we need to think about how ocean literate our decision-making processes are, or how ocean literate our institutions are. And so one of the really fascinating things has been doing a series of interviews with key decision-making institutions across the UK, to think about how do we operationalize ocean literacy? How do we move from talking about it as this really nice to have thing to what, something that actually means change and really results in action to address the challenges facing the global ocean? So that's been some really interesting work. In terms of kind of assessing and evaluating ocean literacy, as well as the questionnaire work, we've also looked at how ocean literacy is represented within the Community Voice Method interviews. So the values framework that Sue developed for the Community Voice Method also included aspects of the ocean literacy dimensions. And so we've been analysing those interview transcripts and the films from an ocean literacy perspective too. And very similarly, we've been doing the same work with the theatre. So really thinking about what ocean literacy dimensions are being reflected in the process of co-creating the theatre outputs, and that was very much the focus for Shetland. But also, you know, are there expanded ideas of ocean literacy dimensions that are being made visible through those processes? So, for example, in Portsmouth, we talked about the fact that using theatre practice is a really great way of getting marine master's students to build their skills around stakeholder engagement and active listening, and skills that perhaps they wouldn't necessarily learn from a normal, in inverted commas, master's program focused on marine science or marine and coastal management. But by working in that kind of really transdisciplinary way and bringing in theatre practice, they get to almost test out a real life consultation and learn from that experience, to learn those skills that they'll need in their future careers. So it's been used in lots of different ways throughout the project.
Yeah, I think it really comes across how integral ocean literacy has been to some of the conceptual thinking, but also as you commented on, but it being also this mechanism to operationalise and to be kind of applied, especially in some of the instances you just mentioned, with master's students, for instance, but in lots of other kind of forums, is really interesting. So it kind of is very well suited, I suppose. And it's kind of my next question was, what do you think makes ocean literacy work so well in this particular, in the context of the Diverse Marine Values project?
I think the fact that it has evolved. So, I mean, there are still challenges with that idea of literacy. And I myself have had many conversations about that and my own challenges with it. But it's taken us 20 years to get to a point where ocean literacy has gathered momentum and we're talking about human-ocean relationships, which is great. That's such a positive thing. The fact that the concept has evolved to be this kind of more inclusive idea of relationships, connection between people and their ocean, their coasts, their seas, to me, that's what really lends itself to the project. And it allows us to think about that diversity of values that's been so central to our project. It allows us to think about emotion. It allows us to think about knowledge. It allows us to think about perceptions and awareness and behaviours. And so there are so many ways that people can express ocean literacy that we're trying to capture in the project. And I think it does. Yeah, it's been really useful as a framework for understanding those different relationships that people can have.
And conversely, was there anything that you felt didn't work quite so well in using ocean literacy?
I mean, as a concept, generally, it's a tricky word, as I've said, and so I think there's still a bit of work done there, and it's not something that you can, I wouldn't go into a community group and say I'm going to talk to you about ocean literacy. You've got to be careful about the language you're using and think about the audience that you're using it with. And I think there's still a little bit of pushback against it because of that term, literacy, to be honest. So that's been a bit of a challenge, and always is. Getting questionnaire responses is always a bit of a challenge to get as high a response rate as you want. So that can be difficult. And I think really integrating all the different types of data and value information that we have. We have some really interesting and fascinating insights that we've gathered through the project. And for me, I think one of the challenges as we come to the end of it is really pulling it all together and getting a feel for what it means for ocean literacy for each of those three communities. And there's still a lot of work to do to kind of think about the best ways of assessing ocean literacy. I mean, as I said, questionnaires are like this snapshot. They're a moment in time. And to me, they don't necessarily always kind of drill into that emotional why. They don't tell you the why somebody feels the way they do or why they answer in a certain way. And so I think there's still a bit of work to do around understanding that component of ocean literacy. So I think there's so many more things for us to take forward through the project and to really think about how we bring those different types of data together and think about next steps for each of the three places.
Yeah, and as you say, it's about those three different places with very different different contexts, different communities. I wondered if you could reflect on anything to do with the different locations with regard to ocean literacy.
That's a fantastic question, and I'm glad you asked it, because I had, just as I came to the end of my previous answer, I'd started to think, oh yeah, but what about this thing with Chepstow? So one of the challenges with the concept of ocean literacy in the three communities we were working in is that Chepstow is not a traditionally coastal place, particularly, you know, it's somewhere that has a maritime history. It's on the within the catchments of the wider Severn Estuary, which is second highest tidal range in the world. So it's an incredibly dynamic place and very influenced by the tide and coast. But when you're there, it doesn't feel like you're somewhere coastal. And that was intentional. You know, I really wanted to challenge the idea of who gets to be coastal and whose voices and values get to be considered within the Diverse Marine Values Project. Sometimes that diversity needs to include, or should include, inland and non-coastal places, particularly somewhere as small as the UK, where none of us are that far from the coast. But what that meant was, actually, in all of the processes that we've been engaging with, so with the questionnaire, with the community voice method interviews, it's been quite hard to engage people with the idea of their river, their estuary connecting to the ocean, and really getting in that catchment to coast framing as part of ocean literacy. And to me, that's kind of okay. I mean, I think to me, that as a result highlights that there's more work for us to do to help people understand that whole system connectivity. And I think that's part of the role of ocean literacy, is that it needs to expand to beyond the coast and the deep blue, beautiful ocean. It also needs to include our estuaries, our rivers, our whole catchments, so that people understand that the ocean is for everybody and they're all connected to it. And so that's definitely been one of the challenges, and it's definitely something that's particularly different for Chepstow, whereas in Shetland and Portsmouth, those places feel more coastal. They are more coastal. They feel more obviously connected to the sea. And so I think it was an easier concept for people to understand and to understand how it was relevant to them. And it's something that's a area of work that's happening across the ocean literacy research field more generally, is thinking about how we make it relevant to those people who actually maybe aren't living within 5, 10, 20 miles, kilometres of the coast.
And I suppose also those people who maybe are, but who are not engaging with the ocean environment in, for whatever reason. It's been really fascinating talking to you about, you know, the significant application of ocean literacy throughout this project. If there was one piece of advice you could give to somebody who wants to use this method or wants to know more about ocean literacy, how would you advise them?
I suppose the first thing I would say is that ocean literacy is more than communication and it's more than education. And I think that's really, really important. We're still in a place where that is the dominant framing and the dominant discussion around ocean literacy. And there are other really relevant and parallel concepts. There are things like ocean identity, marine and ocean citizenship, ocean connectedness. And really what they have in common is that these concepts are trying to help us understand the complexity of human-ocean relationships. And really, if you're thinking about ocean literacy, for me, the really crucial thing is recognizing that it is more than education and it is more than communication, and that we need to be inclusive of all communities. So when working with stakeholders, with communities, not every initiative should be focused on schools. Not every initiative should be focused on kind of education in a really formal setting. It should be about fostering engagement. It should be fostering connection. And that we should be thinking about what access and experience can mean for different people. Access and experience is one of those additional dimensions that we've included as a result of some of the work that we've been doing through the Diverse Marine Values Project. And really recognising that access can be through art, can be through creative methods can be through literature, can be through stories, can be through film, or can be through technology. All of those things I think we've been able to explore a little bit in the project. And I think that would be something that I would really encourage people to think about if they're using ocean literacy as a framework going forward, that it should be inclusive of all of those different ways of accessing and knowing the ocean. That's where you get that diversity.
Thanks, Emma. It's been really fascinating talking to you. Just to say that if you want to read more about Emma's research on the project, if you go to the project website, Diverse Marine Values website, and the link will be in the show notes. Thanks so much, Emma.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. If you're interested to learn more about the Diverse Marine Values project, please visit our website, which we'll link in the show notes, and tune in again for the next episode in this podcast series.
The Sustainable Management of UK Marine Resources programme is funded by the Natural Environment Research Council and the Economic and Social Research Council. The Diverse Marine Values project is one of six projects funded to explore new ways of foraging partnerships and approaches to marine management in the UK. For further details, please visit the SMMR website.